Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Triangulation is brought to you by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Triangulation, episode 87, recorded January 16th, 2013. Alexis Ohanian. It's time for Triangulation, the show where we get to interview some of the most interesting, creative, important people on the internet and ask them questions. You get to ask them too via our chat room at Twit, irc.twit.tv. And I'm thrilled to be able to talk to Alexis Ohanian. Because he is a very important person on the internet, perhaps best known as a founder of co-founder of Reddit, which won, by the way, in the Dig Reddit Wars. Reddit won. It's over. We can declare victory. He's also the chief swine protector at breadpig.com. You might have seen his TED Talk about Mr. Splashy, and lately brought Lester Chambers back to the national consciousness, did a Kickstarter campaign to get Lester to record another album, and a successful Kickstarter campaign. Alexis Ohanian, welcome to Triangulation. It's great to talk to you.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Hey. You're not involved with Reddit directly now, are you?
I am on the board of Reddit Inc., which has been spun off from Condé Nast about a year ago. Now it's its own entity. We got a new CEO, an ex-Facebooker named Yishan. And yeah, the team's all out there in San Francisco. And I try to be as helpful as I can as an evangelist and an advisor and a gray beard, if you will. But I'm not there full time anymore.
You're awfully young to be a gray beard.
there are definitely a couple of gray hairs coming in.
So, but you have the time and the leisure to kind of pursue things that interest you at this point?
Yeah, I mean, I was very fortunate with how Reddit turned out. And, you know, at 23 years old, I really got to be able to start to do things that I loved. And, you know, for the first 3 or 4 years, it was just still working on Reddit and helping that grow. And then I peaced out and I left the country like a lot of startup founders do. And I went to Armenia. We were talking earlier. I went home to the motherland for 3 months as a Kiva Fellow, an awesome microfinance nonprofit. And I was volunteering there. And I came back trying to figure out what I wanted to do next. And then my buddy Steve, my Reddit co-founder, was launching a travel site called Hipmunk.
Which I love, by the way.
Excellent. Yeah. I joined like a week before launch to do important things like draw the mascot and handle marketing and PR stuff. And then a year after that, I found myself looking at SOPA and PIPA and realized, you know what? We would have never had the good fortune to be able to start Reddit if either of those bills had existed, and made that sort of the full-time gig. And since then, have been trying to push forward a much more positive agenda about how useful the internet is as a platform, and how, you know, whether it's helping a musician who is wronged by the music industry like Lester Chambers, or taking a bus around the heartland to promote open internet. We literally took a bus. We just shot a documentary, actually, that was displayed in D.C. yesterday, to basically spread awareness so that every one of our elected officials knows how important internet freedom is to every one of their constituents, not just Silicon Valley, but all Americans.
That is so awesome. It's just a wonderful story. What was your first exposure to computers?
Oh, my goodness. This is so cool. I haven't gotten to think about this at all. So I was praising you earlier because, you know, screensavers for me was very validating, because at the time, actually, well, let me answer your question because I'm not dodging it. My first computer was a 486 SX that my mother and father got me when I was in sixth grade and somewhere middle school. And I was actually trying to track this down with my dad for my book. And he's not sure it's somewhere in middle school. But the point is, neither one of them, my mom didn't go to college. My dad he went to a hippie school. Neither one of them really saw they didn't totally get this thing they had just bought. They weren't using it. They were literally buying it for me. And I was lucky enough to have parents who could, you know, put down the money and were willing to get one and say, listen, take it apart, do what you want with it. Don't you dare break it. Like, be able to put it back together, but have at it. And a few years after that, I got my first internet connection, a nice 33.6 dial-up. And of course, I used it to start gaming. And so I got into Quake. But I also used it to make websites, and it changed my life. It absolutely changed my life. And so you all were so early, and you were on my TV screen. Like, I could flip channels, and I could be looking at rock stars, And then I could be looking at you guys. Not to say you guys aren't rock stars, but just that, you know, technology was being talked about in a thoughtful way. Computers were being explored and discussed. And dude, my first gig was as basically a CompUSA sales slash helper person. I can't really describe it, but it was such incredible exposure because I got to deal with customers. You guys had such a great approach to dealing with other human beings who weren't nearly as nerdy as we were, but in a helpful, useful, fun way that it was quite inspirational. Because, like, trust me, there were lots of people in my peer group who had no time for noobs.
Right.
And it's so important that we make time for noobs because we all were noobs at one point.
Right.
I certainly was. So.
No, of course. We all were. Did you hack at all? I mean, you know, so you're gaming and you're playing Quake, but, I mean, were you also programming? I guess if you're doing websites, you kind of are. And
yeah, you know, I haven't programmed since college. But when I was in high school, you know, I took my – we only had a Pascal class.
Oh,
and
God.
I took three times. I became the, like, teacher's assistant by senior year. And admittedly, though, at that time, I was spending my class time planning out what I was going to do later that day in EverQuest. But my mom pushed me to sign up for community college classes, and I was doing, like, Java and computer animated design. Anyway, just random stuff. And it made such a difference to be able to not just – I mean, I always dreamed, like I think most gamers, of making games one day, and I haven't quite gotten there yet. But it made it so easy to transition into that mentality because, you know, I could be sitting in class working on, I tried making a text-based, I mean, this was Pascal, it was kind of limited here, sort of choose your own adventure style Aliens RPG, like Aliens themed. I was really huge, still am a huge fan of the Alien series. And then I'd go home and play EverQuest. And even though I knew I wasn't there in terms of development, like when you're watching the math that goes on at EQ, you know, all those sort of rolls of the dice, all those random numbers, like you could see it was not a huge leap. It was a bunch of graphics and obviously a much more robust programming language between where I was in Pascal class and where I wanted to be with EverQuest. But I could connect those dots. And it's so inspiring when you're a kid working on bullshit classwork to finally, not all of it was, but a lot of it was, to finally have something that you could build and people... Mm-hmm. Like real people could use and see in the case of websites. And just to be able to make a shitty GeoCities page. I'm sorry, it's family friendly. To be able to make a crappy GeoCities
page. It was shitty. You can say that.
I know someone archived them. And I think my Silicon Valley, I think it was Hills or Grid. I don't know if I can remember the number. But anyway, it was just a crappy Quake 2 fan page. That was my first. I distinctly remember my first website. I got an HTML book and I started reading. And I was like, man, this book sucks. There are all these people on the internet who have written much better tutorials. I can learn from them. And I'm copying, pasting stuff. And it's just like, it's just so cool. Even though the little counter was probably just counting views. And every time I reloaded, it was just me that was making it go up. It was so cool because for all I knew, there were people all over the world who were looking at my stupid Quake 2 fan page, and it was awesome because I was just some high school kid. So it's so empowering. And so I know how lucky I was to have gotten those opportunities, to have had a couple of parents who had the resources and the know-it-all to be like, this kid should have a computer, that it's such a big deal now. I mean, I know how many sort of life cheat codes I've gotten just by being a white dude here in the U.S., but there's so much opportunity in this platform that is the internet and technology. And I want to make sure everyone knows how important that is so that we can get as many other kids sort of using those same cheat codes and having those same opportunities, just because I want better stuff, better app photos.
I remember vividly that same, I'm a lot older than you, but that same experience of the thing that's so fun about programming is you control the universe and you get this result and you see it and you can influence it. And it's a feedback loop that is sucks you in. And I think that the people who are really good at it, I think, started gaming because you're like a baby duckling. Your first imprint of the computer is it's something for fun. It's something enjoyable. And it stays enjoyable. People who discovered the computer as a word processor or a spreadsheet, it's always going to be work for them.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And, you know, the book that really got me thinking about entrepreneurship was called Masters of Doom. And it's the story of...
What a great book.
Great book. And please read it. Everyone go read it. Like, this is... It's... I mean, it's... it's the kind of thing where if you have any appreciation for first-person shooters, you'll probably just adore this thing regardless. But it's so great because you can empathize with these characters. You know, I guess Romero's a little harder to empathize with if you know the later years. But a genius like Carmack and these dudes just working on building a game that ended up changing, you know, video games. It seemed so fun and so inspirational. And Steve, who I started Reddit with, he lent me that book when we were in college. And the funny thing with Steve is, so Steve did the real heavy lifting in terms of building Reddit. By the time I graduated and Steve decided to write the first version of Reddit in Lisp,
he wrote it in Lisp?
All convinced him that it was a good idea. Steve was also the guy, you should have Steve on. Steve was the guy at UVA who's like known in the CS department for doing projects in Lisp. If it wasn't specified, you know, what language, he would solve it in Lisp just for giggles.
Actually, I love Lisp. And it is often said, mostly by people who were Lisp programmers, that the greatest programmers learned to program from Lisp first because you get the abstractions. The idea is that you're not learning how to control a computer. You're learning how to express a problem and a solution. You're thinking algorithmically, not computer. Like, I'm not teaching the computer to do something. I'm thinking about how to express this problem.
And, you know, I still to this day have a fear of parentheses. Because
you should.
And Steve, I tease him because we very quickly realized that him sort of helping guide and tutor me in Lisp was not the most effective use of either one of our time. Yeah. This is just, you know, dumb first-time founder stuff. But to this day, actually, Steve has since evolved into a fabulous teacher. And I know this because he has a Udacity course that I recommend everyone take. He basically walks you through building Reddit. And he has – it's a fabulous course. It is, of course, free. He teamed up with one of his old professors at UVA to work on it. And it's so great because, again, it's to the spirit of this thing, which is, you know, a guy like Steve, who is easily one of the best programmers I've ever met, a brilliant mind like his, you know, knows that he learned a lot of the best things that he has learned over the years from the internet, from a free resource that someone else volunteered some time to, whether it was, you know, pushing some code up on GitHub or writing a tutorial or a news group or some community that helped him along the way. And him giving back is fabulous in this regard, because I tell you, to get a free education in web development from Steve Huffman is a steal, absolute steal. So please, everyone go take that class.
Udacity.com, it's CS253, web development, how to build a blog. That would be so awesome. So, but I can't imagine that Reddit stayed in Lisp for very long.
No, actually, you know, about 6 months into Reddit, I mean, remember, this was the first round of Y Combinator, and no one, not even Paul, really knew what he was doing. Steve and I managed to get invited to Google I told this to a reporter off the record, but it wasn't. Anyway, it's public knowledge now. We were invited to Google for this, for what ended up being an acquisition offer. And that was a small, you know, acquisition offer, but it was this incredible turning point for us because we realized, oh, wow, this might actually like be working, you know, if Google's interested. And this is a fledgling company. Think of what it would have done to the Reddit dig thing you had mentioned earlier. But we decided not to, and we thought, all right, well, we're going to need to grow things a bit. And we'd had Dr. Chris Lowe, who is also in YC, but his company had fallen apart. He went back to grad school. He's also brilliant, a nuclear physicist. He was helping us out part-time writing code, but we knew we needed more development help. And that was when Paul Graham suggested we actually merge companies with Aaron Swartz's company, Infogami. And it was Aaron's impetus, him joining up and being a huge Python evangelist, convinced Steve to rewrite the site, along with the fact that Steve was literally sleeping with his laptop in bed because how unstable the site was. That also helped.
But, you know, I guarantee you Reddit was better. The code base was better for having thought about it in Lisp first and then throwing that code out and going to Python. I don't think that's so bad.
Well, the part that Steve learned the hard way was fear the wrath of a Lisper scorned. You should look. He did a really great blog entry explaining the switch from Lisp to Python. And the comment thread must be somewhere on Reddit still, but he did a really great job. He just said up front, listen, you know, we really appreciate how much the community supported us because there aren't a lot of websites written in Lisp, and you all were such a great champion but we're switching to Python. And he was not very liked for that when he
there's still a lot of neck beards out there.
Yeah.
And I love Lisp, but I wouldn't want to maintain a code base for something that big. And I imagine Reddit's pretty big code.
Yes, and I can tell you, if you go to code.reddit.com, you can download it because we are open source. Well, there's a little bit of the sort of ring voting, spam fighting stuff that's black boxed, really just because those are evil people. But the rest of the site's open source. I always tell people, if you don't like Reddit, or if you don't like certain subreddits, you can always create your own. If you don't like that, you know what? We're open source, so please crush us.
You know, this is one of the things that I think really at first might have been a challenging part, and certainly challenging for investors to wrap their head around Reddit, but it ultimately was the strength of Reddit, was the notion of subreddits, rolling your own, open sourcing it. Was that from the very beginning? I mean, how do you build a business around something like that?
Well, you know, Steve and I had a very important fight like a month into Reddit. It was our first like pretty serious discussion where we really, really butted heads. And we made a decision from the very beginning. Like the nice thing with there only being two of us was we could split it up and just say, if it's a business decision, Alexis gets final say. If it's a technical decision, Steve gets final say, sort of defaulting to our respective strengths. And I really wanted Reddit to implement tags. It was, you know, we were at a point where they had enough traction. The site was just this one front page. But what I thought we really needed was the ability for someone upon submission to choose, you know, a couple of tags so that we could really quickly goose a bunch of different categories. And Steve said, no. People will one day be able to create their own subreddits because, you know, what I might tag, you know, an update about the fiscal cliff, I might tag politics and you might tag Obama and someone else might tag Congress and someone else. It's harder to have cohesive discussions. And really this was a thing. And to Steve's credit, he saw this certainly before I did, was going to be in these user created subreddits. Now, that said, we had that code for, I don't know, a year before we finally pushed it out for other people to be able to create their own subreddits. And we were so anxious. We didn't have nearly the size of Dig, which was admittedly the chief competitor. And we thought it was only a matter of time before they do this. And when they do it, they're going to be able to launch a hockey sub Dig or Dig, you know, almost overnight. Whereas we're not going to have that kind of depth because our community is still so much smaller. And so we sort of rolled it out ourselves. And so I launched, you know, the gaming subreddit and started getting, you know, creating house ads and trying to bring people over there and really slowly grow these communities until we had enough people to think, all right, open the door, anyone can make one. But there was a while that we really thought it was only a matter of time. And then even after we launched them, I really thought that that was going to be the thing that that got copied because it just – you know, I deferred back to that first conversation Steve and I had. Like if this was going to work, it was really going to need to be this platform for communities. And now it's funny you bring up the business side of it because – you know, we were lucky. We only raised $82,000. We got 12 grand from Y Combinator. And then at the end of Y Combinator, there's a demo day. And we raised another $70,000 just from angels. And we were acquired, I don't know, 16, 17 months from start to finish. So it was not, it wasn't a huge venture raise. Obviously with Hipmunk, it's been a very different trajectory. But back then, you know, we just wanted to make something that was popular and had traffic, and you know it was 2005, so you could kind of get away with that. If I put on my investor hat now, and it's like, let's get some revenue, please. But back then, it was a little bit more saleable, and you know we never got past the angel round. And you know ultimately, we told people we'll use advertising, and we'll be respectful of our users. We won't use a bunch of crappy ads and things that you know people sort of get away with now. We wouldn't want to go there. And, you know, as Reddit has grown, we've explored different stuff. I mean, sponsored headlines are still the top way that the site makes money. But Reddit Gold has been a really interesting exercise where people can gild comments. So it's one thing to give someone your upvote, but there are these really thoughtful comments, like when someone on the politics subreddit explains Obamacare in plain English. And this is something that like the Washington Post quoted, like in years of having this bill out there, no one had really synthesized it down to a few paragraphs of plain English until this one random anonymous person did. And that's the kind of thing that we want people to say, you know what, we're going to gild you. I'm going to pay money to sort of buy you a Reddit Gold subscription, which is fairly superfluous. I mean, it's a gesture. There's some extra features and some cool stuff that makes it valuable. But most of it is built around the fact that there's already many communities which are doing these things for one another, whether it's having secret Santas or giving pizza or whatever. Let's use what already exists naturally and find ways to monetize it without screwing over the user base.
It's only $30 a year. Has it been a success?
It has. It has in that, you know, it is not a huge cost to us, right?
Right.
And this was actually this
well,
was the
but you do turn off ads, so there's an opportunity cost. I mean,
there is. It's when you what's interesting. Yes, I mean there is. It is not a significant enough percentage of the traffic to really make a huge. I mean, compared to how many? I mean, I think Reddit had 4 billion page views last month.
Holy cow!
There are plenty of page views to go around for serving ads. But the brilliance here was actually from Drew Curtis, a buddy of mine.
Fart.
Who's the founder.
Yeah.
Yes. And he and I were talking over drinks, no surprise. And he talked about the success they were having with or they had with Total Fark, which was
right.
Reddit Gold is pretty much just me copying off of Drew. Most of the ideas are that, but there is something to be said when you have these communities, whether, you know, whether it's online or offline, there are ways to, and we haven't seen it mature to the point where it's like, oh, forget online advertising. This is the new way of doing things. But there are constructive ways to make money while not also doing it in spite of your community. There are obviously platforms like, say, Kickstarter that lend themselves really well to making money while also, you know, sticking to community norms and, you know, having sort of everyone win. But I think even as a sort of community platform, as a platform, you know, whether it's Tumblr or Twitter or Reddit or Facebook's sort of made more inroads into this than the rest. We have to find more creative ways than just advertising, especially just banner advertising, especially now that, you know, our mobile devices don't really accommodate all of those awful, awful skyscraper and bloated banner ads.
I think that I mean, you may not agree, but it seems that you have a respect for your users that trumps the need to make money. Now, you were out of it in a year and a half. Maybe that would have changed. But I believe that's the success of Reddit, frankly.
Well, to be fair, Steve and I did. We stayed until the end of a little bit beyond our contracts.
Okay.
So in total, I think I worked at Reddit for about the first five years.
That's a long time. All right.
I would say all of the huge growth of Reddit has happened since I left my full time capacity. So that could be correlation. I leave that up to you guys. But you know, it's not that. And you know what this comes from is it's, you know, at the end of the day, Steve's the guy who's pushing the code, right? And Steve is a very ornery guy. He's a wonderful guy, but it hurts him when he has a terrible experience online. He hates it. And having someone from the very start who's writing that first line of code with all those damn parens who empathize so much with users, I think that set a tone. And, you know, in all these sort of years since, you know, the Reddit team still very much respects that. And yeah, sure, I'm sure it's come at the cost of short-term revenue, no doubt. But long-term, I think it's absolutely the approach to take. And you're seeing the same thing now in Hipmunk. The big difference, of course, being we have very wisely learned to hire designers much earlier in the process, so it doesn't look like Reddit does.
Well, look at the lounge. If you want to see great design. Now that's a beautiful look at that pen. That is glitzy and.
No, I mean it's, you know, what's nice is if you go to Apple.reddit, the Apple subreddit has been beautifully reskinned, you know it is.
That's one of the neat things about subreddits. You really can do gorgeous stuff.
The StarCraft subreddit. I mean, it looks beautiful in the sense that it looks just like the Apple.com website, but
but that's cool.
Cool, right? The Star subreddit is one of the most like, holy cow, this is not like, shouldn't we be getting a check from Blizzard for this? And it's all fan made.
But that's the point. It's not you doing this, and you gave the power to your users to do this, which is, I think, fantastic. We have a TNT subreddit that it's just gorgeous, and it wasn't even us. We use it, you know, Tom and his crew use it on the show, but it wasn't us who did it. It was some fan who did it and did a beautiful job. I think the real thing that you get should the real entity that might want to get credit for this is Condé Nast.
Mm.
To their credit, they didn't try to change anything, or did they?
No, you know that, and I have spoken very publicly about this, mostly because people are so surprised.
Yes,
you see an old school publisher like that acquiring, you know,
isn't that sweet?
A big startup, and if you think about it, how many of those acquisition stories ever go well? Right, like you don't hear a lot of, oh man, that was a great merger and acquisition. Like a lot of these stories and the narrative among startup founders is you're going to be there until your handcuffs come off because it's probably going to suck. And we went in with an open. I mean, I can't speak for anyone else. I went in with an open mind. I knew that I was having a life changing experience at 23, and I wanted to make sure that the people who did that felt like they got their money's worth. Now, Condé Nast really got their money's worth.
Yeah.
What is cool about this is it hopefully can be a role model for other acquisitions because, I mean, Condé Nast knew what they didn't know, which was pretty much everything about our tech. Like, they knew enough to think, all right, we will by and large get out of their way. Now, admittedly, it was harder after the founders left. When Steve and I finally left, it was definitely trickier because then, you know, the team didn't have as much clout just from a, you know, it's not like, hey, it's Alexis on the phone or it's Steve on the phone. It's just like, it's different. And that's where you saw there was a period when, you know, Reddit was going through some pretty rough transition. And fortunately, you know, it stayed the course and geez, now, you know, it's an independent company. It just keeps growing every month. So I'm thrilled because I just want to see what happens next month. We had an Arnold Schwarzenegger on for an AMA yesterday, which pretty much made my week.
Did they ask him the horse duck question?
Yes, they asked him. They tweaked it a bit. It was, would you rather fight one hundred duck sized predators, predator sized duck?
And what did Arnold say?
He said, what did he say? He was like, I've already defeated a predator-sized predator. So I think I could take the duck-sized predator, no problem. Yeah, definitely take that, which is I think, prudent because, you know, even though there are 100 duck-sized predators, they're still very well-armed. I mean, it's not, you know, I imagine, I don't know how the, like, shoulder cannon would scale down if it would feel like, I don't know, a little like pinprick or whether it would still be as powerful. I need answers, but I think you made the right choice.
You must've been thrilled when President Obama did an AMA, or were you?
Oh yeah. Oh no, no. I not only was I thrilled, and he did it from Charlottesville, which is, so Steve and I went to UVA. That's where Red started, like, I don't know, a few miles from where the President of the United States did an AMA 7 years later, like total mind.
Kidding. And
I was on TV the next day offering Mitt Romney to come on and do one too, but sadly he did not. But to have that happen, it's crazy. I mean, the other nice thing too is now that the president has used it and has done one, it's a lot easier to go up to people and be like, hey, you should do an AMA because the president did one. And, you know, come on, right? Is this asking too much? But that said, I'm still actively pursuing Jay-Z. No word yet, but hopefully. Maybe you guys can help.
I have no connection. I don't know, but I love the idea. Would you rather fight 100 duck-sized predators or one predator-sized duck? I would choose the one predator-sized duck instead of dealing with 100 duck-sized predators. I've already fought. Show it. I've already fought a predator-sized predator, so I'm confident. This science checks out, says Mokeman 21. That is seriously the most rational answer to this question I've ever heard, says Jay Gong 92. You know what? You must love it when somebody like Arnold comes on and gets it.
Yes.
And participates and plays and understands what's going on. I mean, that's so cool.
In the interest of journalistic integrity, though, Leo, you forgot to include the blah, blah, blah.
In your films, are all the ayahs in the script, or you improvise them? All improvised, every single one. So I'm not going to click on that link because I don't know what's going to happen if I do. But okay, never mind. So that's good that Connie Nast had the sense, and now you're at 4 billion views a month. That probably was the right thing to do. You wrote a book on becoming an entrepreneur, an ebook, Lessons from a Startup Guy, Something People Love. But I'm excited about this next book, Without Your Permission.
Yes. Oh, cool. Yes. The ebook was more of I found myself giving the same advice to founders,
right,
whether it was their portfolio all the time. So I was like, I'm just going to make like the playbook, like the blueprint version of what I'm telling you guys, make electronic. And actually we should see if I had been thinking, I would have made a special Twit coupon. Can we do that later? Can we do
anytime? Great.
Okay. Done.
So here's what we're going to do. We're going to edit this. And ladies and gentlemen, this is the coupon code. And we'll put that right there. The magic of television.
Thank you.
So when does this come out?
So the book that comes out this fall. And yes, it's Without Your Permission, I found myself, whether I was talking about politics or art or business or so many things, I kept going back to the same themes regarding the internet and what it means as a platform for awesome people to basically spread their awesome ideas. And so in doing so, they don't need to ask for anyone's permission, hence the title. And so whether you want to start a company in your apartment, whether you want to start a web comic, whether you want to start a music career, whether you want to start a revolution, whatever all these things are, you know, in a world with a truly open internet, all you need is access. And that's such a powerful thing. And so I thought, you know what, let's write all this stuff down that I keep talking about and hopefully make this the best version of all of those things I've been saying. And so using stories from my own life, as well as stories from friends of mine, people I've encountered across all those fields I mentioned, it's just a bunch of, you know, sort of part inspirational, but also part prescriptive and hopefully a little funny too. Just talking about all of the opportunity. And if you'll notice, it all kind of comes back to a lot of the open internet fight that's been going on for the last year or so, especially since we defeated SOPA and PIPA, which is, you know, we need everyone to know, not just citizens, but also our elected officials, that the internet is this incredible resource, not just economically, but that's a huge, huge thing. There aren't many sectors of the economy that are growing like the internet economy is, but for ideas, right? It's the world's greatest library and the world's greatest stage in one. And I need to make sure every single person knows that. And this book seemed like a pretty good vehicle to do so. I don't know what's next, but I'm almost done my book edits, and then I'll be a very happy man.
And you're drawing doodles for it.
Yes, you got to have doodles. I mean, you'll notice Reddit, Hitmonk, and Breadpig all have mascots that I've drawn because I can't do anything without it having a mascot. It's sad but true.
So you created the little Reddit guy.
Yes. Yeah, that was the Reddit alien was a crude doodle in my senior year marketing class of all places. And then I went home and on a cracked copy, of PaintShop Pro 5, it's high school, I doodled the first version of it. I didn't even know about, like, oh my gosh, I was not, as you can tell from the design of Reddit, not really a great designer for a while. The first couple of iterations looked like communist propaganda, like the alien was all just like stern-faced and these giant eyes. Anyway, I eventually got through a couple of rounds until I liked it. But I'm really proud to see how much it's progressed because the Bread Pigs, I feel like, a just sort of better design logo. And then the Hitmonk, which is the most recent one, I feel like actually looks like something someone who might call himself or herself an artist would have made. So, you know, progress. I would hate to see myself getting worse as an artist over the years.
Maybe I'm being tricked by you, but you used to have it looks like on this Reddit, you used to have a Reddit alien website with a history of them, but now it redirects to Reddit's front page.
you go to, this may still work, we're going to try this live. If you go to redditalien.com.
No, that's what I did, and it goes to the the front page.
A bummer. I had about 400 logo doodles. So I ripped off the Google idea of changing the mascot. Except not just for holiday, or changing the logo, not just for holidays, but for like whenever I wanted.
For whatever reason, yeah.
And so over the years, I must have done 300 or 400 of these little logo doodles, all kinds of weird escapades the alien got into. And it was really heartening. At the time, I was going through a lot of personal stuff, and it was just a fun thing to do every morning that didn't feel like work. But it was so heartening to hear from people who, you know, again, really early on, would say, you know, I don't actually really care for the stuff on Reddit. Like none of this, I don't really care about news, but I come to see what the alien is up to. So I liked knowing that even though it didn't really scale well, it was happy along with myself.
And you have a sad alien on Reddit today, but we won't talk about that right now. But it's kind of sad to see the alien sad. I don't like to see him sad.
Yeah, it's been tough. Hopefully some good will come out of all this tragedy.
I believe it will. I really do. Tell us about Lester Chambers. How did you become a Lester Chambers fan?
You know, my dad raised me on a lot of good rock. So I was a lot of Stones, a lot of Dylan, Hendrix, Joplin in the house. Like I heard a lot of that stuff. And the Chambers brothers were a part of it.
Yeah.
I had no idea when his photo went viral in March. I had no idea of what happened. I just assumed, oh, you know, he's just living a chill life, doing his thing. And I learned, like a lot of people did, when that photo went viral, he or his son posted it on Facebook with that gold record in front of his face saying, you know, I basically never got paid after decades of hits.
Horrible.
You know, genre-defining music, like I signed a terrible contract and they continue to screw me to this day. And here he was, homeless for a while, sleeping in like recording studios before this awesome nonprofit called Sweet Relief. Mind you, designed that nonprofit's sole purpose is to help musicians who have been screwed by the recording industry. And so the next time they use the argument about doing this to protect artists' rights, keep in mind people like Lester, because they don't really care that much about at least artists like Lester. And this photo goes viral. And at the time, you know, I was talking with a few of the folks who worked with me and I was like, yeah, it'd be really cool to help him out. But you know, there's no way in hell he's going to listen to some guy from the internet who emails him with this idea. and we had other projects going on. And, you know, a few months ago, we reached out and the day later, he was on the phone with us. And I pitched him on this idea of just basically helping him do a Kickstarter. He was aware of Kickstarter.
Really?
His son was much more, I mean, his son's a musician. His son uses Reddit. Like, his son took the photo and, you know, sort of had a sense for hopefully spreading this message.
Well, he knew the 99% meme, too. I mean, this was part of that 99% meme.
Indeed. And when I spoke to them, they were down. I mean, we had like, I don't know, a 20-minute phone call, and I was booking a plane ticket for me and one of my buddies who's a filmmaker, and we flew out there and met with him and shot the trailer for the Kickstarter and basically said, you know, we don't want a percentage of this. But normally when we do a Bread Pig project, like a portion that, you know, we normally work comic book artists like Ryan North or XKCD or Saturday Morning Breakfast Cereal. And the majority of the profits, more than 75%, go to the artist. And then what's left goes to pay our employees, but also gets donated. And I was like, listen, dude, you need all this money. And he said, you know what? I was meaning to tell you, I wanted to pay this forward. And so I want a portion of the profits from this Kickstarter, as well as from the album that we make, to go to this nonprofit, Sweet Relief, that had done so much for me.
Oh, that's neat.
And just sitting there like, people, you do not think that people like this can exist in real life who have gone through so much, not just professionally, but also personally with all, he's had all kinds of health issues and still have this outlook and this worldview. It's inspirational. It's absolutely inspirational. And, you know, the least I could do was sit with him for a day and hear him talk about, you know, hanging out with John Lennon. It was a privilege. He also signed, I swiped a record from my girlfriend's dad's record collection from the Chambers Brothers so I could get him to autograph it for me. I was like, this is the payment. If you can sign this for me for my girlfriend's dad, this would be awesome. And he did. He wrote a very nice note. And I think I have like 1,000 dad points now.
Yeah. And 1,000 points with those of us who remember the Chamber Brothers. You raised $61,000. And is the album in process yet, or what is going to happen?
So they've pretty much got their track list. They got their songs. All this music is either going to be public domain, and that's harder than it should be because of some awful abuses of copyright.
Yes.
Original music that belongs entirely to Lester. So the port of this album, and he still rocks, dude. We did a show at WeWork in San Francisco 2 weeks ago, and he rocked. I mean, it was standing room only, and this is, you know, this was an audience that was really split between, there were some, you know, serious Chambers Brothers fans, but a bunch of just geeks who cared about, you know, making right what the industry had done wrong. And everyone was jamming. I mean, he's still got his baby making voice. Like, it's jamming the harmonica. And anyway, they're going to put together this music. He's going to own all of it. And they should be hopefully hitting the studio in the next month and hopefully have an album out by end of April, early May.
What a great story. Alexis, you must feel, I mean, you're still really young, but you must feel pretty good about the trajectory your life has taken.
You know, I have nothing to complain about. And I get to wake up every morning working on projects that I love. I have a wonderful cat, and I'm very supportive. So, I mean, it's pretty much perfect.
We won't let your girlfriend know you mentioned the cat before you
Damn. That's the moment when my phone blows up. Actually, she has better things to do than watch me on an interview. But yeah, She'll probably watch the recorded version and then be like, again, you always mention the cat before me.
No, but I can tell from your eyes that you were thinking about her.
Good. Thank you, Leo.
Yes.
Thank you.
It's nice to see somebody who is so actualized, who is making a difference, who has, I think, the right values. You know, just the idea that you don't have to ask permission. What you're promoting here is creativity, and unfettered creativity, and a little bit of an anarchic kind of point of view.
My life motto has been, well, I guess since college, has been to try to make the world suck less. And I think most of us actually believe that. I really do think most of the people in this world are good people. We have plenty of forces that want to tell us otherwise. But I really genuinely believe that. And, you know, the more folks we can get online sharing those ideas and just doing stuff, the better. I mean, it's going to mean better everything, better companies, better politicians, better nonprofits, better music. I mean, we were talking earlier about Will Wheaton's show on tabletop gaming, on board games, like, that's so awesome that gets to exist, right? Because in a previous world, that show never gets greenlit. And if it does by some random freak of luck, it would have been a very different show and certainly not on his terms and not as good, frankly.
It's the end of the gatekeepers, and it couldn't happen to a nicer bunch of guys.
Yes. So, yeah, and here's just it, right? Like, you know, you've experienced it from both sides, right, as one of the OGs of all this. And I feel like my timing, I missed the first bubble, but I've been so fortunate to have caught the second kind of tech, the social tech boom. But like, think of my goddaughter who, you know, I mean, I see her on that iPad and she's like a year and change. And I can see the instinct and I can see that. And I know that she's going to grow up in a world with an internet connection and a high speed computer. And she's going to be programming probably before she's talking. It's so cool because it gives me so much hope for all the great stuff going forward. Because, you know, they're not going to live in a world where they knew gatekeepers for so much of this stuff. And that's great. You want to go watch the I Have a Dream speech? Just go watch it. You want to go start a company? Just go start it. Like, it's so empowering. And we just need to get through these next few years and basically not screw it up for them so they can enjoy it all.
Get all those old white guys out of the way and let's get something happening here.
Yeah, it's true.
I say that as an old white guy. Alexis, such a pleasure. You're an inspiration. Your joy and your optimism and your creativity are just such a breath of fresh air. Thank you so much for spending time with us today.
Thank you so much for having me, Leo.
It
is, like I said, it's a pleasure to be on a show, having a call with the dude who I grew up watching on TV. So thank you for that.
My God, you're welcome. You didn't have any love lost for Kevin Rose, though. It was like, I'm going to push him out of the way.
No, we only met a couple of times. We don't. It's obviously Kevin has been extremely successful.
Yes.
So there's no. I mean,
no, no. That was completely teasing. Kevin wouldn't say that, and I know you wouldn't say that either.
Although I will say, you know, I've been wanting to arm wrestle him. And I finally started exercising. So when this fight, if he ever comes to Brooklyn,
you got a long way to go, Alexis. This guy, I don't know if you've seen him. He's got guns that won't stop.
Oh, geez. See, I believe in gun control, so I don't.
No, he's a rock climber. This guy, I'm not even joking. This guy, I don't think you want to arm wrestle. Maybe leg wrestle him. His upper body strength is off the charts.
Geez, great. Thanks. You're not even giving me a chance in this, Leo.
All right. This is it. We're going to get Tim Ferriss in your corner. We're going to train. We're 1 year from now, on this stage, Alexis Ohanian, Kevin Rose, arm wrestling, the championship of the social media world.
Oh, geez. What have I done? Fighter Leo. I'm not this.
Such a pleasure. Thank you, Alexis Ohanian. God bless you. All the best. Keep up the great work. You're just, it's thrilling to talk to somebody who's got it.
Well, thank you very much, Leo.
Thanks. Take care. What a pleasure. So much fun. Golly. Thanks. Thanks a lot, Alexis. I will let you go. I'm sure you want to go have dinner or something.
Oh, you don't even want to know. Since my girlfriend is not here, it's going to be black beans and I don't know. Maybe I'll fry an egg.
At least you're not still living on ramen, dude.
I ate a lot of ramen in high school. We were more of a spaghetti profitable startup.
You could afford meat sauce.
Only on Tuesdays.
I'm really sincere, Alexis. It was rare that I get to talk to somebody who's just, you clearly have the vision. Sometimes you look at something like Reddit and you go, oh, well, the guy was very lucky. No, it's obviously not luck. It's very impressive.
There's luck. You read Outliers was my favorite Gladwell book. I mean, I don't know what was going on with Blink. But, like, to see sort of validated through sort of, like, pseudoscience, but... I know that there is, I mean, there's hard work, there's other stuff, there's, you know, but luck, I still believe plays, it's a big role.
Maybe not even luck, maybe timing.
Yes. Great. Perfect. Which I'll put in the umbrella of things I can't control.
Right.
Don't deserve credit for, but will take all the credit for.
And yet I think there were people who say, oh, you know, you're trying to start up after the dot-com bust. That's not good timing.
No, it takes, this is not, you know, obviously I don't want to dismiss it all as luck, because I'm also saying to every other person who's found success that, oh yeah, you didn't earn it. I mean, it plays a significant role. And yeah, you know, it's a mind job though, to think, you know, how the random circumstances, I mean, the best example I can give, you know, I sort of was deluded into thinking I might be a programmer until I met Steve. On move-in day at college. And the only reason I lived across the hall from Steve Huffman was because at UVA you can check a box that says either new dorms or old dorms. Mm-hmm. And I had no idea what those things meant. And I was just like, old dorms, that sounds vintage. I don't know. And I just checked that box. And I often think, because for whatever reason, I was thinking about that decision enough to remember it to this day. And in hindsight, I think, man, if I had checked that other box, I'd have never met Steve. I'd probably be, I don't know, a lawyer or who knows what I would be by now. But I wouldn't, this whole life trajectory wouldn't have happened. We wouldn't be having this call, and I'd be watching I'd be watching Kevin Rose do this interview right now.
Yes, because you would have disrupted the entire fabric.
I think about that and I think, what an insignificant little thing. And I checked I checked the right box, so to speak. I want to give myself lots of credit for that kind of foresight, but it was just chance. But you know, we all have these opportunities and sometimes they work out and sometimes they don't. Hopefully more of the time
it
works.
It's certainly good to have humility about it. But it's also, I mean, it's clear that we all get opportunities. Sometimes they go whizzing by and sometimes we grab them, and you know, there's a lot of serendipity, but I think you could take a bit of credit too, Alex.
Well, as my girlfriend will attest, I take lots of credit.
Okay, good.
And that's one of the big things that we see in successful founders. And I don't know much outside of that world, but in terms of startup founders, it's men and women who are able to just get shit done.
Yeah.
Like who are willing to write, see that opportunity and stand up and do something or go and, you know, write that email or push that code or do that. Like, and it's a weird factor to kind of, I don't know, it's hard to really describe, but it makes a difference. And, you know, the more people we can inspire, because the internet's so really good at that, right? You want to learn, you want to go brush up on French history. There's a great Khan Academy video about that. You want to learn how to build a web app, go take Steve's class, like just go get shit done, go do stuff. Like after the show, if there's something you've been meaning to learn right now, go learn it right now. I challenge every viewer, go learn that thing you were meaning. Just go, just give it a Google search, go get lost in Wikipedia, although it's not all accurate. go just do it.
Were there ever times where there were just like challenges that you just really had to grit your teeth? And, you know, sometimes I hear entrepreneurs talk about the day that they couldn't make payroll, or there were just things that were just so, you know, and you just kind of made somehow survived, or did it just kind of come easy?
Well, business. Oh, geez. There were certainly business challenges. But I was fortunate and unfortunate to have had some like personal stuff going on pretty much a month after Steve and I started Reddit that really put into perspective my own life. And I think that perspective carries me to this day. I don't think I was a totally different person, but I certainly, you know, I graduated from college. I felt invulnerable, and without going into it, because it usually makes me sad, I gained a true appreciation for life. And I looked at the challenges that I had in business and I thought, you know what? This isn't so bad. I'm waking up this morning, I don't have to think about chemo. I'm waking up tomorrow morning and I'm not thinking about, you know, my will. Like,
right.
Having that as an opportunity, although it's hard to think of it as one, I think made a hell of a difference. And so, yeah, you know, when put in the perspective of things, you know, even the worst day for an entrepreneur, and that's why I hate it when people compare, people use the metaphor of warfare when they talk about entrepreneurship. And I've never been in battle on that. I can't even pretend to know what that's like. But when you start talking about it in the life and death and bringing those analogies, I think you lose perspective of the fact that, no, like being an entrepreneur right now in the US is pretty freaking awesome.
Yeah.
There's a lot of tough days. There are a lot of fights. There were definitely days when I was just really, really worried about the fate of the company. And it's a very bipolar kind of existence. And to be fortunate enough to have had that perspective on it made the teeth gritting a lot more possible. And you know, it is something, like I said, I feel so incredibly lucky to have literally woken up every morning since I've graduated from college working on projects I love. And I mean, don't get me wrong, there's some days I don't want to wake up, I don't get out of bed, like there are bad days. But I really appreciate that fact. And so, you know, I obviously want to spread the meme of entrepreneurship, and I think it's great. Certainly not for everyone. Even on those worst days, all things considered, like you're working for yourself and your founders, and you know, you're hoping to change the world. Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Not a bad way to end. Thank you, Alexis.
Thank you so much, Leo.
Great to talk to you.